Hi, welcome to Visual Studio Toolbox. I'm your host, Robert Green, and joining me today is my good friend, Chris Dias.
Hi, Robert.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
This is your debut appearance.
It is. Yep.
Very happy you're here.
Thanks.
Chris is a program manager in Visual Studio land, and you are a program manager on Visual Studio Code.
Yes, I am.
Which is a very, very exciting new release, new product. So we're going to kind of introduce people to it. I know there was some initial buzz at Build, so we're going to take an opportunity to tell people what it is, what does it do, why was it invented, who was it for, what's the current state of it, where's it going in the future, you know, stuff like that.
All right. Sounds good.
I don't think I left anything out because
there was a lot of questions. Yeah, that was everything. All right. So how do you want to start?
What is it? What is Visual Studio Code? Who is it for? Why was it invented? What does it do?
Oh, okay. So you want me to go from the top and answer
those? Yes.
I thought we would go back and forth. Okay. So Visual Studio Code, so if you think about developer tools today, there's sort of two ends of a spectrum, right? There's full-blown IDEs, Visual Studio, Eclipse, IntelliJ, things like that. And then there's editors. Mm-hmm. So you've got Sublime, Atom, Notepad++, things like that. Microsoft has only ever had the IDE spectrum or right. end of the spectrum, right, with Visual Studio. And with Visual Studio Code, we're actually entering in the into the editor space. So we have an offering now that runs, it's more like an editor. Mm-hmm. It runs cross-platform. So now we're able to have something for folks that are editor-centric, but we can still give them the great experience.
Now, does that say anything about the person or about their coding skills what they like to do?
It's more about what they like to do and where they're comfortable. There's a lot of people who are like, you know, as they move between projects, you know, the one thing that's consistent for them is their editor and the command line. Mm-hmm. Right? So different platforms, different stacks, all that stuff. And so they're happy to be in the editor. The other thing is you know, editors are typically very keyboard focused, command line integration with existing or other sets of tools, where IDEs are very much, you know, there's a lot of wizards, lots of, mm-hmm. you know, it's a full stack integration there, and you can stay in there and you can live in there. I mean, you get the best end-to-end experience in an IDE, from IntelliSense, debugging, design tools, diagnostics, things like that. Mm-hmm. Where in an editor, you're usually using the editor plus a number of other tools that you've kind of fabricated that match your stack and your style and what it is that you're trying to do. So it's not a classification of a person, it's just kind of what they like to do and how they like to work.
Okay.
But up until now, we haven't had anything for folks like that.
Right.
I think the other thing that's interesting about Visual Studio Code is that it's not just another editor. Right? There's lots of editors out there. You know, Notepad's an editor. What we try to do is say, hey, you know what? We need to have an editor. We want to have an editor, something that fits in that space. But we want to take some of the great things that are in IDEs and bring them to the editing space.
Visual Studio is a great editor. It's got some amazing features for editing.
Exactly.
Right.
So we looked at IDEs and Visual Studio and we said, hey, what is it? Like, if we could make an editor that had some of the great features of Visual Studio, what would we do?
Mm-hmm.
We looked at the editing experience, IntelliSense, code navigation, understanding, go to definition, find all references, things like that. Debugging mm-hmm. is another one, right? Everybody says, hey, you know, what's the best thing about Visual Studio? Debugger is clearly at the top of the list.
Right.
So we want to bring the debugging experiences from Visual Studio into VS Code and bring them cross-platform.
Live code analysis, the light bulbs, things like that, are they in there? How do you decide what would go in and what wouldn't?
So that's a good question. I think the rule of thumb somebody said to me one day, which I thought was a really good way to think about it, was if you don't do it once an hour, every day, probably doesn't go in the tool.
Okay.
Right? So that's kind of like, okay, first question, you know, where do you land on that one? And from there, it's really we're trying to be very editor-centric. There's no dialogues, there are no wizards, anything like that. So if you've got things in an IDE that depend on that, then they wouldn't go in there.
Okay.
We kind of think about it, we describe it as this inner loop, the edit, compile, debug loop. And so what we want to do is make that as tight, as rich as possible. Now, if you compare this to editors that are out there today, you can go fabricate these experiences in other editors. But you have to go, and everybody's got their favorite, you know, list of top 10 extensions that you have to have mm-hmm. for this particular tool, and you cobble them together, and hopefully they work together. And hopefully that one that you really love, you know, the guy that created it did not find something else to do. He's not on vacation for the next 3 months because it's crashing on you
right.
now. So with Visual Studio Code, we want to have this end-to-end experience, but make it robust, you know, as what people expect in Visual Studio, that quality, enterprise ready, have that in the editor space, but bring some of those great features from VS down, focus on that inner edit compile debug loop.
Cool. And it's a product that's built by Microsoft. So you've got a team behind it and the regular release cadence.
Yes. Yeah, no, so we have our engineering team. Actually, our whole team is geographically distributed. Our engineering team is in Switzerland. Mm-hmm. There are some folks in Scotland. We have people here. We release on a monthly basis. So we're constantly trying to push out new releases. It follows the whole big sort of, it's interesting, the bar that we have at Microsoft for quality, accessibility, all these different things, the abilities that we have. Visual Studio Code has all that and will have all of that. But it's still that lightweight editing experience.
Cool. Want to give us a demo?
I do. What do you want to see?
Whatever you want to show.
All right. So typically what we do is, so right now we're in, our release is 0.5.0. We're in a preview mode.
Okay.
Right? And so the tool's still, you know, evolving. And typically, or what we focused on first, on our first releases with VS Code is two scenarios. One is sort of no JavaScript, web, TypeScript stack. Mm-hmm. And the other one is ASP.NET V5.
Okay.
All right. So typically what we do is we take a look at what we can do with a no JavaScript application. So let's go
there. So that would be a couple scenarios where people are likely to be on, not necessarily on Windows, and more likely to be doing, to already be using editors, right?
And having a whole slew of tools that they're using, right? Because they've got, you know, there's Grunt, there's Gulp, there's all these different tools that people are using, and they change so quickly,
right?
That's one of the challenges with IDEs. You go, okay, we're going to add such and such a stack to it, and then next week in the web environment, like something completely new comes up, and you're like, well, that no longer makes sense to have in there. So we try to integrate, you know, at a very, very low level, I should say a light level, right? Like just very loose integration with these tools, so that something new comes along, you're not using Grunt anymore, you want to use Gulp, easy to swap that out and put it in.
Cool.
We can start out, we sort of implied it, we didn't really talk about it much, but there's also the first developer tool from Microsoft that runs on Windows, Mac, and Linux. So we're going to run on the Mac today.
Sweet.
Yeah.
All right.
Sharpen my Bash skills. So I've got a folder, toolbox folder, which we created earlier, appropriately enough. And like I said, there's no new project dialog or anything like that. Typically what we see is people starting off by scaffolding applications. Mm-hmm. So we're going to use the Express framework. Express is a node framework for writing apps. You know, it's middleware, view, things like that. And it comes with a generator. And I've already installed the generator. So I'm going to say, hey, Express, my Express app, right? And this is going to go scaffold that out. You can see now I've got my Express app folder. And if I go into my Express app, you can see all the files and folders that it created. Mm-hmm. And what we need to do now is just run npm install, the node package manager install. And this will just go out, pull down all the packages that are necessary in order to run this application. So now we've got a fully built application. We can go run it, but we'll save that for a little bit. And then I'm going to run code and dot. Dot is open code on this particular folder. And this is interesting because, like I said, we're trying to integrate into the command line tooling and all that stuff.
I mean, you have this good looking icon here, but you're not going to click
never
it.
Touch
you're
that.
Not going to reach
no
for the mouse. You're going to click it. You're just going to type.
Right. So now we're in code. All right. Out of the box, we have two themes. We have a dark theme and a light theme. Which one works better on the show, dark theme or light theme?
That's an excellent question. I don't know. A lot of people use dark, but most people on the show use light. So.
All right. We'll go with the light theme. We'll stay safe there.
You viewers watching this, feel free to chime in, because that's a good question.
All right, so a few things just to kind of get started, right? So there's not a lot of Chrome here. Over on the left-hand side, we've got this area. We call this the activity bar, and these panes on the left, we call these viewlets, for lack of a better term. And the activity bar on the left lets you change between the different viewlets. So I've got my Explorer, which shows me all my files, search across all the files in my folder, lightweight Git integration, and some debugging. Now, the other thing
is also TFVS integration?
TFSVC.
TFVS.
No, not at this time, right? We went with Git first for a couple of...
It's funny that I don't know the abbreviation. I know the full word, but not the abbreviation.
For a couple of reasons. One, in the webby world, Git is very popular.
Right.
So that was the biggest reason that we went with Git first.
Okay.
So there's a user voice for TFS VC. You can go and vote it up if you want.
I bet it won't get that many votes.
Actually, it's got a good number.
Does it? Okay.
So the other thing to point out here is, like, we didn't open up a project or anything. There's no project system. It's just a file. It's just a folder with a bunch of files in it.
Okay.
And then we start to reason over what that folder looks like. So standard node application, you know, in package.json, it says my startup is node. In the bin folder is a file www, and there's all the dependencies that we installed. We ran npm install. There's nothing like an add references dialog. We wanted to make it very keyboard friendly or focused. So if I come in here to my package.json, I can actually press control space in here, and I get IntelliSense for packages that I could bring in my application. By default, we sort of list, hey, here's kind of the top 10, I think we do about 100 interesting packages, and as you start typing, it'll go out and it'll start to query npm and pull that down for you. And it will even or pull the list down so you can sort of type ahead and see. And then we'll actually show you version information so you can choose how you want to, which packages or versions you want to pull down. If you hover over things, you get sort of IntelliSense tooltips for it. Mm-hmm. Even, you know, it helps you write these JSON files. So we understand.
Is it red squiggly because you're.
We're doing validation. We don't have a proper JSON file at this point.
So this right here, this is one of the big benefits to somebody moving from their existing editor into this, is it's got a lot of the features that, A, you're used to as from using Visual Studio, but a lot of the things that would be handy to have while writing code.
Yeah,
know about. We've done that for quite some time.
Yeah. Node, JavaScript, web apps, it's all about, you know, these text files, and so lots of JSON files, so can we give you a great IntelliSense experience over that, which is what we're trying to do here. So, you know, app.js eventually gets loaded up and it's kind of our main place where we're going to go and write some code. So there's a few things that I can sort of show you right off the bat. One is, let's just create a string. We'll say var message equals hello Robert. And when I come back down here and I say message dot, I get IntelliSense for message, and it understands that it's a string. What we do is we use for the language service that powers the JavaScript experience is the TypeScript compiler. Right, so TypeScript compiler is written in JavaScript, and so we can host it up.
Okay, cool.
VS Code is actually a Node and JavaScript application itself. Mm-hmm. And so we're able to run JavaScript in the tool, and then we can use the TypeScript compiler to give us a much richer experience.
Can you write your code in TypeScript?
Yes, you can.
Okay.
Yep, we'll get to that in a bit. But just without even having to do anything, we're taking advantage of the power of TypeScript to give you a better JavaScript experience right out of the box. You didn't have to do anything at this point. And like, if I come in here and I change this back to a number, and I say message dot, you can see we think that that's a number. So I can do things like in our startup, and I can say we have full access to the DOM, so I'm gonna do console.log message. All right, so that's basic out of the box experience. Mm-hmm. So a few other things. Not only do we have sort of standard JavaScript, we've also been starting to provide support for ES6. And so what I can do is I can come in here and I can say jsconfig.json. So this is kind of like the lightest weight configure or project file that you can have. And basically, it follows the TypeScript model, where TypeScript has a tsconfig.json file, which says, hey, here's all the compiler options, here's the files to include, exclude, things like that. Well, we're doing the same thing for JavaScript. And again, it's a JSON file. We understand the schema. I can come in here and I get IntelliSense for that. So I can say the compiler options I want to use. We say target ES6. And we can say that the module system that we want to use in this app is CommonJS. It's a Node application.
Okay.
And so once we said, hey, you know what? We want to use ES6 features. I can come in and we'll create a file called utils.js. And I can do things now, start using ES6 features. I can say const. Pi equals 3.14, and I could say export function area, which takes the radius. If you remember your geometry, returns radius squared times pi. All right, so now we've exported this function. These are simple ES6 features. And if I come back over here into my app, I can say now import star from utils, which is our module. Oh, wait a minute. I'm remembering the syntax. Import star from. Oh, sorry. As utils from. Dot utils. Sorry.
Okay.
Right. So what we say was, hey, everything from that module, we'll call it utils. Bring that in. So I can come in here and I can say, you know, console.log utils dot. And now we can see the method.
Excellent.
And as we type, you know, we get parameter tips and things like that.
Cool.
All right. So now, you know, we have, you know, the beginning supports for ES6. And you asked about TypeScript. So we could do something like this where we'll go, let's rename this to tsconfig. All right, so now it's a TypeScript configuration file. And we'll rename this utils.ts. All right. Now, one thing I have to do is a cool little trick. So if I'm going to restart the environment, we're still sort of early, and I get to sort of reload the tool. It says, hey, you know what? Actually, we're switching over to some TypeScript now.
Uh-huh.
So I can bring up this window that we have. It's called the command palette. And I just press Shift-Command-P. And the command palette is kind of like your heads-up display to actually access the tool. And there's a whole bunch of commands that you run here. Remember we talked about earlier, editors are very command line?
Yes.
The command palette gives you complete keyboard access to, I should say, editors are keyboard-focused, not command line-focused. The command palette gives you keyboard access to all different things in the environment. So if I press question mark here, I can say I can run commands in the environment. If you've got errors and warnings, which you see down here, or errors and warnings list, you can see that here. Navigate opening symbols by name. You can run git commands, run tasks, which we'll see in a minute. You navigate through the file. All sorts of interesting things you can do. But one of the cool ones, I'm going to say reload window. And that's basically just going to reload the internals of the tool.
Yeah.
And now we're sort of fresh. And now I can come back in here and and I should be able to say var utils equals require utils. And when we come in here, we say utils dot, and now we have, you know, completion on this. But because this is TypeScript, we can take it another step further and say, you know, that radius is actually a number. So we can start to type our code, and we get richer IntelliSense and validation. So we say utils.area. You can see now we understand that's a number. And if I put in some string here, we'll get a little squiggly. It says, hey, you know what? It expects a number. All right. So that's pretty cool. That's sort of JavaScript, TypeScript right out of the box. But this is a Node application. If I come in here and I say app dot, I don't have any IntelliSense on this, my Express framework, right? I say Express dot. I don't get anything. That's because we don't understand yet what it's just a JavaScript file to us. We don't understand what these external modules are. One of the cool things, again, because we're using the TypeScript compiler, we can leverage TypeScript information to provide a rich IntelliSense experience for this. And so there's a project out there, it's called Definitely Typed. It's up on GitHub. And it contains a large number of TypeScript definition files, which are basically the definition of the shape of a framework. And what we can do is we can use those TypeScript definition files to drive our IntelliSense. So I can do something like this. There's a tool called TSD, which is TypeScript definition query, which says, hey, go search for these things. We want the Express framework. We want Node. We'll use some Gulp. And we'll just do Node and Gulp for Node and Express right now. We'll say action install. All right, so this is going to say, hey, go out to this repository and pull down these typings for me. So now you see we've got this folder here. It says typings Express, and there's my definitions for Express. And if I come in here now, I should be able to say app dot. Oops, app dot. All right.
Express,
you know what we need to do?
App.
Oh no. Let me just go back here. I want to make this back to JavaScript, and I will reload the environment. And now we come in, I should be able to say app dot. All right,
yeah,
so now we load it up. And now I get all the IntelliSense against the Express framework. I can do something like, I can, you know, because we're still using ES6 features, I can say import, you know, create server from HTTP, which is a Node module. And now I can say create server dot, and I get IntelliSense against that. Another thing, I don't know if you notice, underscore dir name is no longer green squiggled because comes from Node, and now we understand what those types are. All right, so that's kind of, we stepped up the bar here, right? Plain JavaScript, TypeScript, ES6, and Node.
Yep.
Right. So writing these applications is not all about writing JavaScript. It's also about HTML and other cool things. So let's see what that looks like. I'm just going to go throw a new file in here. We'll call it hello.html. And right out of the box, again, this is like editors today have these cool extensions. One is called Emmet. I don't know if you've seen that. But it's this kind of Zen HTML coding experience. It's very cool. Mm-hmm. And we've actually integrated it right into the editor. So I can just press bang, press tab, and that'll scaffold out the structure, the header of the HTML file. I can say, you know, hello.
So that's built into the tool?
You know,
you didn't have to install and go and get something to have that capability?
Nope.
Got it.
Right in the tool. I can come in here, I say like div, I want a div, and then in that I want an ordered list, and then I want, you know, three list items. And I press tab, and it scaffolds it out. And we use the snippet model to be able to type through this. So I can say, you know, item one or one, I says tab, and I'll move to the next one, item two, tab, and move to the next one, item three, right? So you have this very rich mm-hmm. experience writing your JavaScript, HTML code. So let me just clean this up just for a second and show you one other thing since we're in here. I can also do script, and we're in a script block. I can say var message equals hello again. And so our IntelliSense experience for JavaScript, even embedded in HTML, is great right out of the box. All right. So that's kind of, you know, just quick nutshell, a quick example of writing HTML. Mm-hmm. This application out of the box uses, or after its scaffold, uses CSS. And so we have a great CSS editing experience. You can see, you know, color, whatever that is. It's, let's change it. We'll say, oops, what happened there? Color. There we go. You know, what color? What's your favorite color, Robert?
My favorite color? Oh,
the shirt is gray. Let's go with gray.
I was going to say purple.
All right, you want purple? Purple.
So gray, because it matches my mood.
So, you know, we have a great IntelliSense experience. You can see it all on the list, but, you know, this is standard CSS. I prefer, you know, like using less or sass, so mm-hmm. let's rename this to be a less file, right? And then we can start to take advantage of less features. So I can say, you know, Robert's color is gray, right? And then in less, that's basically a variable. Right. Which I can use throughout my file, and I can come over here and say control space, there's Robert's color. I can do things like that. So I have a nice sort of rich experience. I can do things like find all references inside here. I can go to the definition of where that's defined, and it'll jump back up here. It's a small file, so it doesn't do lots of jumping, but I can do things like that.
What is our philosophy on when we add things? We've mentioned a number of them, gulp, grunt, bower, less. Who decides when things get added? Is it the same philosophy across what you're doing, what the ASP team is doing? Do you work together? Do things get done differently?
So we haven't done any ASP here yet, right? So it's kind of like the min bar. So we're looking at what people are doing, and we're trying to get to that min bar mm-hmm. by the time we go to 1.0, right? And so these things are sort of min bar. If you want to get in the game, you need to have these great features. The things that we add after that, like the importance of Emmet, for example, is completely customer driven, mm-hmm. right? We have an insiders program that you can join on code.visualstudio.com and sign up for, you get early releases, and we'll use that group, and we talk to them, ask them questions. And right when we started, you know, some folks were very passionate about Emmet. We need to have that support in there, so we added that to the tool. So what we want to do is go from user voice and what people are saying that they want versus put it all in and see what they think. So we'll add instead of just coming out with a big splash. Like, you'll see one thing here, one thing there. You know, just to drive it that way.
So it could be the case that Scott Hunter and those guys have a different opinion of something like Emmet than you do. You'll add it, and they may or may not. Right? There's not one overriding agreement company-wide, is that true?
We haven't discussed that. I mean, we haven't been out of sync yet either, so.
All right,
But we are in very tight sync with Scott and his team, which we'll show you that in a minute as well. All right, so hey, you know what? We've got a less file, doesn't do any good because I actually need a CSS file at the end of the day, right? So we need to compile this thing into CSS. Mm-hmm. And so the question is, how do you do that, right? We need a less compiler. So what I can do is I can use gulp. Gulp is just a task running system. and we can say npm install gulp. And I know off the top of my head, there's a gulp less task that we can use that will compile less into CSS. So we'll just install that into our app. It should only take a second. And while that's going on, what I'm going to do is create a gulp file. We'll say gulp file.js. So gar gulp equals require gulp, bulp, gulp. And if I come in here and say gulp dot, you know, we don't know what type it is, right? So I can go back over here to my terminal. Again, just working with the terminal, very comfortable flow. We've got the frameworks installed. We can go back to TSD, query, gulp, action, install. All right, so that's going to go pull down gulp for me, the gulp DTS file. And now I come back in here, gulp dot. I have IntelliSense for that.
Do you have a question? Yeah, to digress a bit. Is there a way for any project that I can see which of these things has been added?
Which of what things?
You've got, you just went out and grabbed a bunch of stuff, like gulpless.
Yep.
So is there, like if you gave me, you sent me this folder, right? You say, here, you work on it.
Yeah,
You send me the folder.
What's installed?
How do I know what's installed?
So if I was doing this properly, when I did an npm install, I would use dash dash save, and it would persist it into the package.json file. And then when I gave it to you, I would give you everything but this node modules folder. And the first thing you would do is say run npm install.
Okay.
And actually, I would save it as a developer dependency, a dev dependency. And it would install the tools for you. So it should be logged here. I'm just not doing the dash dash save, save dev, just to save time. Okay, but what I did do to save a little bit of time, a little bit more time, was I went over to the gulpless project on npm.js just to grab some code so you don't have to watch me write it. And I'm going to put this in the gulp file. All right, so what this says is, hey, you know what? In the, which is in our public folder, if there's any less files, compile them into CSS and we'll leave them in the public folder. All right, so this is the task that we're going to run. Now, I mentioned earlier we have lightweight integration with external tools and tasks. And one of the things that we do is we look to say, hey, is there a gulp file or a grunt file? Grunt will be coming soon. But is there a gulp file in your workspace? And if so, what are all the tasks that are in there, right? So what I can do is I can come in here, I write task, and see the word less comes up. That's because it matches the fact that there's a less task. There's only one task in here.
Okay.
So we hoist that up to the command prompt so we have keyboard access to it. So I can just say task and run less. We pop up an output window. You can see that we ran it. And you can see down here that style.css was generated as the partner to the less file. So if I come in here and we change this to blue, and our CSS file hasn't been touched yet, I can come in here and say task less, and you can see that it changes automatically because we're running that task.
Okay.
But it's a little bit of a pain to have to keep going up there. This is my build process, right, in this very simple application. We can sort of make that a little bit more automated. And so we have the ability to configure the task system. So I can say task, configure task runner. And so what this is going to do is, let me close a couple of these windows. So listen, we don't have tabs in Visual Studio Code. We try to keep it so that there's three files that you can see side by side, your HTML, JavaScript, and CSS. But we have this notion of working files, which are effectively your tabs. And so everything that you're working on in your group, you can have visible in your working files list. You can collapse them, save them, things like that. Just to point that out, that right now we don't have a tab metaphor.
Okay.
But you can take these and you can move them around however you like. But what we've done here is we've created this file called task.json. It goes into a .settings folder, which is just a convention that we have. And this controls how tasks are run and surfaced in the tool if you want to have finer grain control over it. So we're saying, hey, we're going to run gulp, right? Because this is the gulp task. And then what I can do is basically override what those tasks are. So I can come in here, and again, I get great IntelliSense for JSON files. I can say the task name that we want to override is the less task. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to say that this is my build command. And I'm also going to say that, you know, I really don't want to watch, or I don't want to see any of the output, because I'm that good of a programmer that I don't need to.
What's the difference between silent and never?
Only errors will show up.
Okay.
So what this does, when it says it's a build command, it'll bind it to Control or Command Shift B. So let's go back to where we were. We have less, and if I command click on CSS, it'll open up to the right hand side. Let's change this to green, as in Robert, and I'll press Shift Command B, and that'll run the task for me. And you can see that green gets generated. Okay. So you can take the tools and tasks that you have now. They're a keyboard, you know, shortcut away, and the other things you can do in the task.json, you define problem matchers, things like that, which say, hey, on the output of this particular job, if there are errors, it matches this regular expression, and we'll surface them down here in errors and warnings, and then you'll be able to quickly navigate to them. All right. So that's our kind of, our lightweight integration of tools. So we've got HTML, JavaScript, TypeScript, CSS, less. Do you write tests at all? Should we write a test and see how that integrates? All right, so let's do this. We're going to use Mocha, which is
very... I don't write tests anymore. I just use IntelliTest.
Well, we're going to use Mocha, very popular Node framework. So we'll just say npm install Mocha, just like we've been doing before, right? Same pattern, very, very fluid. And we'll say tsd query Mocha action install. And we'll go over here and we'll create a test file, new file, test.js. And like we did before, let's just go pull some sample code, Mocha test. And come down here, just grab a little snippet, just a sample, just to get an idea of what it looks like. Put this in our test file, test.js. Like I said, you know, now we have like IntelliSense, we have a describe, and then I get full IntelliSense against that, which is cool because we brought down that TSD file.
Right.
Now, if we want to run this, again, I could bring up the command palette. I can type in task. Oh, yeah, one other thing I want to do, I didn't add it to my gulp file, did I? No, I didn't add it to my gulp file yet. We have to add it to the gulp file. So I can start run npm install gulp mocha. And go grab that. Sorry, I forgot that one thing, gulp mocha. We'll go add the job. So here we go. We only need that much. Copy that. Go back over here to our gulp file. So this is just another task that we're going to run. We'll say this is the test task. And it's going to look for test.js and it's going to run it. Let me just get rid of this so that the output looks a little bit smoother. So now we have two tasks that we define. I bring up the command palette again. I say task. Hey, come on, task. All right, maybe I have a problem in here. All right, it should have popped up.
Should have.
All right, I don't know why it's not popping up. The demo people are not with me today. But what we can do is go back over to our task.json, and we can say, hey, you know what? This task that we want to override is the test task, and we're going to say that this is the test command. All right, so we're going to hook this up now to Command Shift T. So when I run Command Shift T, it's going to go run that Mocha test, and we'll see the results of our test right in the environment.
Can you hook it up so that when you build, it runs tests?
Yes, you can hook up your gulp file to say, when you execute this command, execute this task, execute this other one first.
Okay.
So we do it in that fashion. You can't chain them in task.json. What we're trying to not do is create another task running system. We're trying to provide a little bit of a shell around whatever task system that you have, and then support, key binding, and then errors and warnings and other things that come out of it into the tool.
Right. This is, and I don't know if it's probably not hard for you anymore, but it may have been hard. But you know, thinking, does this thing do the same things I'm used to in Visual Studio, which is not your sweet spot? Your sweet spot is, does this thing do that the people that are going to be using it, the things they're already used to?
Yes.
So this isn't designed to be a replacement for Visual Studio.
No.
This isn't designed for people that have lived with IDEs their entire lives. Ooh, you should now go to this and it'll behave like your IDE.
Correct.
Right? This is, you're currently using text editors. We think you would like this one. So it's...
Yep.
You got to get your head around that.
Yeah.
A lot of the questions that, things that pop into my head, like that most recent one, are, oh, well, I can do this in Visual Studio. I wonder if I can do it in code.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And sometimes the answer will be yes, and sometimes the answer will be no. That's not the way people do things.
Yeah, it may not be the right way to do it if you're using it from the command line, right?
Yeah.
It just might not make sense. What you don't want to do is have to have someone peel back or sort of debug what the tool did.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and that's what we're trying to not do.
But
it's a companion to the tools, the IDEs. It's not a replacement for it. People can use IDEs, and you see lots of people using IDEs, but they'll use an editor for a specific task.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so that's what we want people to be able to do. Okay, so we've kind of built our application. It'd be cool if we could run it, but before we do that, we love this application so much. Let's commit it to source code control. What do you think? So before I do that, I'm going to add one other file called gitignore. And let me drag it up to the root of the folder. And we don't want to check in the node modules folder. All right? So another thing that's interesting about this, Robert, is that I've never saved any files.
No, you haven't.
So we have a feature called autosave. Mm-hmm. And on idle, we'll persist the file for you, which is pretty cool when you're doing web development and you want to have this sort of iterative, F5 refresh the browser based on the changes that you make. If you've got tasks or anything that are like file watching and they're constantly kicking things off because you're saving, you can turn it off and work in that mode as well. But I love the autosave feature. I don't have to worry about anything. Everything is always persisted for me. But, let's save this to source code control. So I created a .gitignore file, and we're going to go over to the git viewlet. And so we created this folder from scratch. There's no git repository yet. We'll set initialize repository. There's all the files, modulo what's in node modules, and we'll just say initial commit. And command enter, and that'll commit it locally. All right, so what's cool about this is once there's a git repository backing it, we can do things like track your changes. So, comments. So you see we have a change bar on the left-hand side. Right, we understand what was changed in your file. So let's do something like this. We're going to use the command palette again. I'll say command P, and we're going to look for our JADE files. And index.jade, welcome to, and we'll just say Visual Studio Code. All right. So this is the UI piece that'll get rendered when we run the application, just to make sure that we're honest. Something actually happened. Again, you can see the change bar. You also see this little badge over here on the left-hand side. There's been two changes. Again, because we have autosave turned on, right? So these files are actually being persisted to disk. You can see down here, I'm in the master branch.
Have you tested that with large numbers? Like, what if there's 10,000 changes?
It works. This is just basically shelling to git.exe.
Okay. All
right. So when I click on like app.js, we can see side by side the changes. That one's not really interesting, so let's just kind of go get rid of it. All right, once we do that, the diff no longer exists, and it'll drop away. And here's the change we made to index.jade. I can come over if I like inline view. I can view it that way.
Mm.
What's cool about this is this editor on the right-hand side is written in JavaScript, HTML, CSS. It's the same editor that we use in Visual Studio Online when you're viewing your diffs and your source code. Azure, OneDrive. So if you go to OneDrive and you view your code up there, it's this editor. Even in the IE F12 tools, this editor is in there. And what's interesting or important about that is being able to ship an HTML and JavaScript-based editor in the F12 tools that ship with IE on a zillion desktops, more than a billion desktops, the editor is very tried and tested.
Yes.
Supports very long minified files, things like that. So a lot of great work went into the editor as a result of shipping on those platforms.
Cool.
So we've got this, here's the demo. And we'll commit this change, right? And so we are happy with that one. And now we want to run this application. I can go to the command line and just run it. But the last thing I want to show you is we actually have debugging built in for Node. So I can bring up the debug viewlet. And the thing we have to do, since it's an editor, it's working on files and folders. You got to kind of say, hey, this is the thing to go run, please.
Right.
And we were smart. We noticed that there's a package.json file in there. When I clicked on this little gear, we created another file called launch.json. It's kind of a friend to task.json. And it said, hey, in the package.json, it said the startup was in the www file in the bin folder. Let's pull that out and say that's the program we're going to start up. And this is just a label, right? We can say, toolbox demo. right? Mm-hmm. And you can do things like specify command line arguments, you can change the working directory that the app starts in, things like that. You can create multiple configurations, so if you've got an app that's running and you want to attach to it, you can do it that way as well. So once we've done that, you can see over here at the top of our Vuelet, you know, those are the two configurations we have, and we'll do the toolbox demo. And let me go and set a breakpoint right here in our code, and I'm going to press F5. This is going to start up our server, and it'll break on our line of code right here in the tool.
Nice.
And I can hover over MSG, or it's undefined at this point, and if I step over it, you can see console.log, you know, in our startup is the value. I can go and look at everything on the stack. We show you locals, and I can even do, you know, watches, so, you know, MSG. It was raw out of the stack right now. So we come back, you can see here we're there. So everything you expect, step into, step out, step over, sort of the basic core debugging experience that you need here. And so we'll run the app. And if we come over to our terminal, you can see in our startup, that's the code that we wrote in app.js. And now the app's running, right? I have to browse to it to make it come up. But I want to actually set one more breakpoint. So even though the app is running, I can come back over here to VS Code. We'll go into my route. I'll set a breakpoint. And then we'll browse to the application, which is running localhost 3000. You see, boom, we automatically come back to VS Code. We're broken on our breakpoint that we set while it was running, and I can do everything that kind of expected. I can step through it and do all that stuff. If I go over the debug Vuelet, I can even, you know, manage all my breakpoints. So let's just get rid of our breakpoints. We'll press run, and we come back to the browser, Express, welcome to Visual Studio Code.
Nice.
So that's kind of end-to-end how you build, integrate with your existing tools, run some tests, debug, and run your Node application.
Very cool.
I can show you one other demo. Do we have time for one other demo?
Of course.
Very quick demo. All right, so this was good. I mentioned that we do two things. One is Node. Let me go back over here. Stop the debugging session. You can see the app will stop running. And let's clean this up. You can go away too. So let's see. So let me back up one folder here, ls. There's the app that we created. So the other thing I mentioned that we support is ASP.NET V5, right? The new core CLR and ASP.NET stack. And we'll do the same thing. We're going to scaffold an application. We're going to use Yeoman to scaffold that out. We'll say, yo, ASP.NET. And this is going to do just like we did with the Express scaffolding tool. We'll do Yeoman. But Yeoman's kind of cool because I get this sort of command line UI, but we're just going to create a web app. Mm-hmm. We'll take the default name. It's going to create that folder. So we'll go into the web app folder, and we'll run DNU restore, just like we ran npm npm install, which restored all the node packages. This DNU restore restores all of the assemblies from NuGet. Right? So this will go fairly quickly.
And so this is tied to ASP.NET Beta 5, because that's literally what you're using. So it's currently using the full .NET framework, and it'll switch over to the core when they switch over to the core.
Yeah, right now, since we're running on the Mac, we're running on the .NET framework on Mono.
Okay.
Right. And once it switches over to the core CLR, then we'll automatically do that. So now I did the same thing before, right? I did code dot, and we come over here into our startup, which is the first file that gets run in ASP.NET V5 apps. And now I've got managed code, right? So I've got C# code here running on the Mac, cross-platform, and I can come in here, didn't have to do anything. Oh, well, wait a minute. We'll give it one more chance. Let's do reload. Sometimes it needs to think. Control space. Oops. Console. There we go. Sorry about that. Console dot. And of course, we have camel case search in IntelliSense. So we can say, you know, console write line in startup. And you see we have overloads. You can up and down arrow through here. See what the signatures are and all sorts of things. And what's cool about this is we're actually using the Roslyn compiler. To drive Visual Studio Code's IntelliSense code understanding navigation experience on the Mac.
Which would then give you the ability to add things like light bulbs later on if you thought that.
Exactly.
If you using all you of
the.
That.
Yep. Right. Yep. So the core refactorings and stuff that you would get.
Would
out
you ever
of
see
Roslyn.
That being an option, something that you could optionally have if you wanted it?
Yeah, we could make it an extension.
Yeah.
Which we should talk about extensions. We'll talk about extensions sort of at the end after we finish this demo. So I get this great, you know, experience for writing managed code. Let's just, for the sake of time, we'll just come over here to our views and index.cshtml, and we'll say, again, just to prove that we're actually running, we'll say, hello from VS Code on the Mac. Right? We've got autosave on, so everything is good to go. One of the things that we do is in ASP.NET V5 applications, there's a project.json. This is kind of the file that tells us, hey, what are the things that are going on in this project? We understand this. Just like we had in package.json, I can come over here and I can get IntelliSense against all the NuGet packages that are out there. But we also look at this section called commands. And these are the commands that you can say for this application you can run. One of them is Kestrel, which is the web server that runs on Mac and Linux, and web is for Windows. And we hoist these things up into the command palette. So if I come in here and I type in DNX, you can see I can run DNU restore, which we ran from the command line, or Kestrel or web. We'll run Kestrel, and this will go start up the server. And then I can browse to localhost 5000. And there's our application. Hello from VS Code on the Mac.
Nice.
So that's a very quick.
And then presumably I could open that. I could take those files and move them over to my Windows machine and open them in Visual Studio?
Yes, yes, you can.
And then go back and forth.
You can go back and forth.
Okay.
Yep. Like if I add files in here to the application, they'll automatically get picked up. So right. I could do things like, let's see, what's cool? Models. So let's go here. We'll say new model. We'll say user model.cs. Let me go stop this. What happened? Oh, I must have hit something. All right, we'll kill that. I can go add a new model, so I'll say namespace. This web application dot models. So I know that off the top of my head. I'll say public class user, and we'll say public string last name. Get set, all right, just something very simple. If I come back over here to startup.cs, I can say var u equals new user, which is what we just created, u dot, you know, last name equals green, all right? So I didn't have to add any files to a project because that's the way the ASP.NET V5 works. It's file and folder based. And if I run this again, then it'll pick up that code and I don't have to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's, you know, very quick ASP.NET V5 development in VS Code as well.
Very cool.
All right.
So let's return to kind of questions of who is it for. I think we covered who it's for. What does it do? Who is it for?
Mm-hmm.
You're in version 0.5 now, so we're still pretty early.
Yes.
Give us a sense, if you can, of what the roadmap looks like.
So the biggest thing that we're working on right now is our extensibility model. If you go to the user voice, number one, I have a plugin model, which we know that we have to have, and we've known that we had to have it before we started. But what we want to do is, when we came out with 0.1.0, was come out with a tool for us and get people sort of interested and excited and get feedback on that. And then as that evolves, start to evolve our extensibility model so we can do that in the right way. So that's the thing that the team is completely 100% focused on, actually about 75% focused on.
Okay.
We're also, you know, there's other features and stuff that we're adding as we progress here, and we track to the ASP.NET V5 schedule as well. So we have cross-platform tooling for every release that they have.
Okay. So would you say that your goal is to be on kind of the same schedule they are? They're talking about RC1 in the fall, and then they haven't said when they'll...
So when ASP.NET V5 has their RC1 in the fall timeframe, we will have some tool that supports the builds that they have.
Okay. Right?
So whatever beta, RC, whatever they have, VS Code will support that. For the features that we have, we're basically on this month-to-month cadence, right? And so we'll continue to release small updates and tweaks that, you know, really start to streamline these experiences. We look at sort of what people are doing. We gather a lot of telemetry and sort of what the workflow is, and we try to see, hey, you know what? People are getting stuck here and here. Can we unblock those?
Mm-hmm.
Core features that we need in the editor are being added. And then we'll start to, as we have an extensibility model that is something we can go and talk about that we feel comfortable with, we'll start to roll that out and get feedback on it. And you know, what we typically do at Microsoft, as you know, is we have these sort of two big events, one in the fall, one in the spring. Mm-hmm. And so in the fall, we'll have, you know, who knows what we'll pull together at that point. In the spring, we'll have something there. But really what we want to do is be on this monthly cadence of releasing the tool and getting feedback rapidly from that. We don't want to just batch up everything
and
wait, right?
Okay.
Get in people's hands early and get feedback often.
Additional languages, particular Python.
Ah, yes, Python. So Python support is we have, you know, okay. So, all right, let me back up a little bit before I talk about Python in particular. There's really what we think about is three levels of support in the tool for languages, good, better, best. So good is you have syntax colorization. And so batch files, we have syntax colorization for batch files. Better is we have understanding at a file level. So your LESS files, CSS files, SAS files, things like that. We understand at the file level what's going on. We can tell you where all the different variables are across the file. And then best is multi-file across your workspace experience. And for that, we have for C# and ASP.NET V5, TypeScript, and starting to improve our JavaScript experience across the entire folder structure. So for Python right now, we have sort of good. We have, you know, good colorization. We're going to continue to sort of tweak that. It's not what our focus is right now. It's really improving the JavaScript and sort of core experiences there. But we'll continue to push that along. Not only Python, PHP is another one that we see huge numbers of users writing in the tool. So we'll continue to push those along. We're going to work with the Python tools team at Microsoft, the Python tools for Visual Studio, and try to get us up to good and best, good, better and best, so that we have sort of full IntelliSense across the workspace and things like that. Probably not going to happen the next month, but it's something that we see lots of people using.
Right.
So it'll drive us.
Cool. And we should just reiterate for hopefully something that everybody understands is this is free.
This is definitely free. And
it
takes
this
about
is a free product.
If you have a good internet connection, it takes about 30 seconds to download and install.
At Build in the Moscone Center in the keynote overflow, or I think it was the keynote overflow room that I was in. On the wireless with everybody else in the wireless, I started the download. It took maybe 30 seconds and
then it's about 50 meg download, I think.
Yeah. And then it took me, I don't know, maybe less than a minute to install. So it was download, install in under 2 minutes.
And once you do it on the Mac and Windows, it has auto update. And so whenever we push a new release or release a new release, we tag it. And then the tool will go say, hey, is there a new release out there? And it'll pull it down automatically and install it for you. So if you have Spotify, you know, every now and then you start up Spotify, it goes, hey, there's a new version. Restart. It's the same model, right? And just the next time you restart, you'll have the latest and greatest version.
Cool.
Our Linux, we're still trying to figure out what the right framework to use for Windows and Mac doesn't work on Linux yet, so we don't have an automatic update there. But you can always do a check for updates, and it'll tell you and download for you. So,
all right.
Yeah, so you're always up to date. It's great.
Cool. Very, very cool.
All right.
I think this is great.
Code.visualstudio.com.
Yes.
And our killer
at
Twitter
code.
Handle, at code.
Which someday you'll release the behind the scenes story of how you got that, but I would wait.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming on and showing us this.
Thank you.
Can't wait to have you back on probably in the fall to see what's new.
Yeah, definitely. We should do this again.
We absolutely will.
All right.
All right. Download it, play around with it, let us know what you think, and we'll see you next time on Visual Studio Toolbox.